This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favorite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I think this is an exciting opportunity to be able to be involved in a franchise league in this part of the world, in the continent of Europe, in Ireland.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
All right, we are jumping into the middle of a story here because Padraig O'Hara is on the side of Mount Everest and we're talking to him live. Padraig, whereabouts in the world are you exactly?
What is story, lads? How are you even?
Good.
Where are we? We're at Everest Base Camp.
And how the hell is that?
It's all right. So it's been in worse places.
The bit to get there is obviously incredibly difficult, but the bit that's coming next is supposed to be even harder. So what kind of a schedule are you on?
The schedule has been ripped up and torn apart and put back together 100 times at this stage. We're here a little over 6 weeks now, and you come to me at the right time, I suppose. We're going to be making our last ascent up through the icefall up into Everest, hopefully tomorrow night, with an attempt to push towards the summit inside the week.
Okay, and is that how long it takes to get from base camp here to the summit? It's about a week, is it?
Yeah, it takes... you push up to camp one, you go up through the icefall. I don't think we're going to stay at camp one. I think we're going to try and push all the way up to camp two. But usually you'd go up to camp one, sleep, up to two, sleep, three, sleep, four. You won't sleep up there. And then you push for the summit from there. And then obviously you have to make your way the whole way back down.
Okay, so you've obviously been trying to get a bit further than this up to this point, have you? Is that what you said, why it was ripped up?
No, so like the weather really has, so the first part of getting up onto Everest is the icefall, which is just my left here now, and that's probably the most treacherous and dangerous part, but you have to find a route through it. So unfortunately this year has been far more difficult than most, so that just delayed everything. What you're basically relying on here is the Sherpa community, the teams here. They go and they set lines through it. They find a route up, and then obviously all the munitions have to be moved up, all the oxygen, all the tents, all the food, all the everything, so that the kind of climbers like ourselves can utilize that on the way up. So that's nearly done now. They're nearly finished. So we're trying to get up there as soon as possible. As I said, we'll try and leave tomorrow night with the intention of trying to get up inside the week. Prior to that, we've been just going up and down, acclimatizing, getting the body used to it. Because the route was closed for the bulk of the season, we had to do that on another mountain. So we've only actually been up on Everest once so far.
Okay, right. And that bit where you're talking about getting the body acclimatized, is that a physical thing? Is it partly a mental thing as well?
No, it's purely physiological. Like, you have to do it. We just can't survive our bodies, especially us Irish. Like, we're living at sea level, essentially. So your body's not used to high altitude and lack of oxygen. So you have to go up so your body essentially freaks out and figures out that there's not enough oxygen there for it, and then come back down, and then it starts to make the adaptations itself. So you start to grow a bit of hemoglobin and get some red blood cells going that you can transport oxygen around your body a little bit better. So you go up to come back down, rest, let that happen in the body, and then go back up higher again. So you can get closer and closer to, like, we're going for 8,800 meters. So it's a long, long way up.
And how far is base camp from the summit? You've obviously laid it out there in terms of days, but What level are you at the moment?
Base camp sits at 5,400 metres.
And what's the atmosphere like there?
It's like, well, it's only a couple hundred metres below the summit of Kilimanjaro. So you're well, well up as you are.
Can I ask you a little bit about the preparation for the mental side of it there? You're talking about going through the night for one of them. Can anything prepare you for that, do you think? Or is it actually less rigorous when it's essentially a matter of life and death? You're tuned in or you're not.
I don't know, you have to do a ball of work. Like, you obviously do the physical element to it and get your body as well adapted as you can, which you've done pretty well. But it, like anything, it just comes down to everything between the two ears. Staying in a decent headspace, it's a lot easier said than done. It's been tricky so far in the mind for the next couple of days, but like, this is probably the exciting part. So you're getting giddy. It's to try and keep everything under control. Try and do the best you can up there. But like, you're out of control, really. You do the best you can, you get the body right and the head right, but the mountain will dictate what goes on. You know, I said 7 days up and down, all going well. That's if the weather doesn't change or something doesn't happen on the route. Everything and anything can happen up here. It's a different environment, like.
And physically, that bit about it's one foot in front of the next, like, how much rest will there actually be? How much walking will there be? What's that ratio?
The rest, it doesn't really exist, to be honest, because it's really, really difficult to rest anyway at this height. Like, anybody who's been following the journey would have seen that even at 5,400 metres, like, I got sick when we first got up here. We had to go back down. The lads on the team have had the same issues. It's trying to stay healthy. It's so hard to eat. Like, your whole... everything about you doesn't work or function properly. Every system you have doesn't function. So it's just about grinding it out, really. Like, you'll get up to camp one and two. We've been up there already, so my body should allow me to sleep and eat at that stage. But from there on up, like, you'll do very, very well to get anything into the system and just hope and pray that your digestive system works, that you can sleep for an hour or two and you can just grind it out, really. You know, it's just going to be a big, big push for a couple of days where you just have to go as hard as humanly possible and hope that it works out.
With things not working, is that already the case, Padraig, or is that just when you start to go from here?
That's always the case. Like, once you enter altitude at all, anything really above 3,000 metres, you'll see people's systems break down. Even if you look at people who just come as far as base camp, you'll see that they can't eat, or that they'll just get sick, or diarrhoea will get a hold of them, or whatever. Just all your systems shut down. They just don't function the way you want them to. So, to be honest, I've been here quite a while now, 6 weeks. I feel really, really strong. I'm very, very grateful, because I have had a couple of blips like everybody else, but we're right at the tail end now. It's like waiting for the county final day or whatever. Yeah. That's about to come now, and I'm actually in great form. Everything is perfect. The body, all the systems seem right. Everything, I'm exactly where I want it to be. So I'm just hoping that stays that way for the next 6-7 days.
I remember one of the times you were with us not that long ago, you were talking about that Stephen Knights had played at the weekend. The lads packed the bags and they were going for a pint afterwards, whatever it was, and you had the canoe up and you were gone out across wherever you were going, Loch Arb or wherever else, and you might have been up Crowpatrick after that. I think I'm right to say all that. Where has that left you now? Do you feel the benefit of all that now?
Oh yeah, I've had a good look back at the training regime, and like, I've paid my dues. Do you know yourself when you turn up for something, be it a 5K or a marathon or a county final or whatever, you can't get away from that headspace of like, have I done the work? And I can definitely look back and say, I've put in the work. My body is doing exactly what I wanted to do up here. I feel strong. As I said, everything seems to be doing what it's supposed to do. And I think the training that I've put in over the last 2 or 3 years is definitely paying dividends. I'm just a bit reluctant to say too much until we actually get into the big boy territory of those last few days.
Yeah. Why are you doing it?
Good question. there's probably two major elements to it, isn't there? There's one, there's the personal side of it. A dream. Like, I think a lot of people leave these kind of things behind. I always wanted to go for Everest, always and ever. since I was a little kid. So coming off the back of football, I thought I had the opportunity, and I'm obviously here now taking that opportunity. And the other side of it is, it's just, I think it's a massive piece in the kind of line of work I'm in. Like, we've been banging the drum and preaching positive mental health and trying to make a real change at home, both in Mayo and all across the country. And I feel like this is perfect, perfect example of exactly where we're at. And I think you can do an awful lot from this space. I think it's an amazing story to tell. Even over the last couple of weeks, the amount of people, families, young people, the messages that come through, people following the journey, taking inspiration from it, living through the experience. And like with anything, you're hoping that it probably pushes other people on.
You are fundraising for the Mayo Mental Health Association as well.
Yep, absolutely. That's the flag there, ready to go. Obviously been working with them for the last number of years, and like, we're very, very lucky, I suppose, in Mayo to have such a strong association. But like with any charity, it demands funds, it demands support and awareness, and I'm just very honoured to bring that flag with me, to have these conversations and even talking to you guys, and any bit of attention that comes, I suppose, our way through this project is another opportunity to open that conversation. And I think it's fair to say it's probably one of the most important conversations we can have across the country at the moment.
What's the toughest part been up to this point for you? Those blips you talked about.
I didn't mind the sickness bits. They're okay. The hardest parts is just the unknown and the giving up on it, kind of surrendering to the fact that you have very, very little control over it. Like, I've done everything in my power to make this work. It's been a huge burden, a huge body of work over the last number of years, and I still don't know how it's going to work. I'm sitting here talking to you guys about something that's going to happen over the next week, just having a clue how it's going to go down. You really are at the mercy of the mountain itself, the weather. It's a dangerous, dangerous playground, you know. So I'm just hoping that things pan out. That's probably the hardest part, is just giving up to it. And then obviously being away from home is quite tricky. I thought I'd be fairly okay. My daughter's birthday is tomorrow. It's her fourth birthday. It's hard to get away from the idea of not being around and taking time away from them. It is, you know, it's a selfish project, whatever way you look at it. So coming to terms with those things can be pretty difficult too.
It feels like you need to be in a good mental health space yourself to deal with the homesickness part, which you've described there, is, I think, everybody can identify with. But that other part of that is living in uncertainty and being able to surrender to it and maybe even thrive in it. Like, that seems like it's the thing, one of the things that people wrestle with: uncertainty about finance, relationships, job, work, the future of the world. This can be a constant companion in people's lives, and you're having to wrestle with that. It's kind of living out the daily grind that you meet with people who are struggling with their mental health.
I think that's probably the story of the whole expedition. Like, the summit is there, and that's the dream and ambition, is to obviously touch the top of the world and come back down and be successful. But the more time you spend over here, the more you realise that it's the whole journey, it's the whole expedition that's far more important than whether we get to a summit or not. It's the realities of battling away in your own head. It's been significantly challenging, albeit I still think being out here tackling something like this is a lot easier than day-to-day life of running around, racing after kids, getting everything together, making sure work is in place, bills are paid. Like, life is incredibly difficult for everybody, and people listening here are probably thinking you're on the side of the mountain in one of the most beautiful places in the world, and they're right. It's an honour and a privilege to be where we are and do what we're doing. And no matter how hard it gets at times, you do have to acknowledge that it's probably still easier than day-to-day life at times.
Equally, there's a reason that people don't do it, right? There's a reason it's an achievement. There's all the 3 years of preparation. You've considered all that. You mentioned your kids at home, and I'm sure maybe no day went past, Padraig, where you didn't consider the perilous nature of what you're undertaking here.
Yeah, you can't get away from it. It's probably the topic you don't want to talk about, really. People die out here. There is no denying that. There's a high level of risk to it. But I suppose there's something inherently in my gut that I believe everything is going to be okay. I feel like I'm in the right place with the right people. I've prepared, you know, as best as humanly possible. And I don't know if you'll ever be able to describe this to certain people, because there are only a handful of people that will come and do something like this, or want to do something like this, or see the risks and the rewards that come with it. You know, only this morning another person died out there. It is part of it, but I really just lean into the self-belief piece on this. Like, I have done absolutely everything. I feel like we've put ourselves in the best place possible, and the gut says it's okay. I genuinely believe that this is going to go right, that we're in the right place at the right time, and it's all good. I think you have to stay in that space, and it's very, very hard to explain that, I think, to most people who just see the risk. And most people prefer safety, you know, and I understand that. People would give up everything and anything for safety, and that's just, I suppose, not who I am and not who the guys are who are with me either.
When you were playing out all those moments, right, every eventuality, I'm sure, comes into your head, right, in terms of, because there will be moments where it'll be, do we risk and go exactly in the mold of what you're talking about there in terms of safety? Do we risk and go, or do we come back, or here are the chances from here, that type of thing? So how far, can you give us some insight into what that thinking is like, Padraig? How far you think you're going to push it when those conversations start to begin?
There's a line. Look, there's the question, who draws the bloody line, and when do you make that decision? There are a couple of situations where you have to turn around. Well, you don't. You can keep going if you want, but it's a death sentence. We've had those conversations. Talk to you about the ice fall. So the ice fall is probably one of the most dangerous parts of this whole situation. You move through that. We've been through it already, but you move through it swiftly and intelligently. You move through it late at night when things are as stable as possible. And there are a couple of places in that ice fall at the moment that are incredibly dangerous. So you just need to move through those as effectively and efficiently as possible. So that's part one. After that, the camps from there are just hard work, really. You're working way up the mountain. The risk, I think, is far less. And then once you get up to camp four, you're now entering what they call the death zone, which is above 8,000 meters. That is where big decisions have to be made. There are a lot of people on the mountain. Things can go wrong. You've seen pictures of queues and different things like that. So put it this way, if the question comes, is the summit more important than coming home, then you turn around. And we have a good team around us. We have a strong Sherpa team. We'll make the best decisions. And at the end of the day, we're coming home first and foremost. We'll get to the summit, great, but it's not to be all and end all, and it can't be.
Have you changed through this process?
Oh, drastically. I think I'm going to have to write a book for myself alone. It's been heavy, to be honest, and I haven't got into it too much. Jason leads out our team, Jason Black. I met him on Hell Week, and the depth of the conversations that me and him have entered over the last while, I think, have undeniably changed my attitude and orientation towards things. There's a lot of big questions that need to be asked, but to be honest, I'm not in the headspace to do it. This isn't the place to do it. You still need to stay locked in to what we're doing. There's a big task at hand, and I just need to stay focused on that. But I'm very, very conscious that once we get this over and done with, there are some big questions and conversations I need to have with myself after the fact.
Okay, well, that's really interesting, and I totally understand that this isn't the moment to do it, but at the same time, it's nice to have that kind of like, I know you need to be locked in, but there's also a need for some kind of escape, even if it's a momentary thing. It's like, I'm doing this for whatever that higher purpose is, and that higher purpose might be self-discovery in the aftermath of it. It might be getting home to your newly minted four-year-old as well, that I guess the mind is a massive thing and can contain a multitude.
Yeah, it's a wild one, and do you know what? It's an area and space obviously been incredibly passionate about, and an area that I thought I was fairly strong into. You know, over the last number of years, going through certain tasks and challenges, spending a lot of time in, you know, lads, I think we're back in action there.
We are, yeah, all good. You were just...
Funny, I tell you, the disconnection was actually my mother trying to ring me.
Oh, sorry.
We should not be getting in the way of that.
No, we shouldn't.
She'd be all right for a while. Yeah, where we were just, yeah, just on about that mindset space, I suppose. As I said, I really thought it was an area I'd be fairly strong in, and do a lot of work in that area and mindfulness and meditation, all that practice. But I didn't realize until you come out into this space, it's just a different game. Because there's so much space to think, you know. I know that sounds probably simplistic, but there's nowhere to run or to get away from those conversations. You know, something pops up in your mind and it might be historical or it might be something you've hidden away from, and you can't, there's nowhere to run. It's not like you can make yourself busy or go and chase something else, or I don't know, get back stuck into the rat race of life. There's literally nowhere to run away from that conversation. So you end up in a battle with your own headspace. And as I said, look, it's a conversation for another day. It's a lot of self-exploration, and I just don't think I'm rightly ready for it just yet.
Yeah, no, fair enough. You've got something else more pressing. Are you getting any sleep? Like, when you say, you know, you might be able to rest at camp one or camp two, is that a couple of hours max?
Oh, yeah, no, I can sleep perfectly down here. No bother. No problem anymore, because you're acclimatized to it now. So we're so used to this feels normal now. Whereas when you first get here, your breathing rate is all over the place, and your systems just aren't used to it. And now I've been here long enough that it's fairly okay. Once I get up to camp one, I'll have no problem sleeping there. I've been to camp two and I was comfortable enough up there too. My breathing seems pretty strong there. It will just be them last few days, the 3, 4 and summit. But I've made peace with that. I've made peace with the fact that, look, I should probably be on my feet for 72 hours, the same way we were at the end of Hell Week. No sleep, no food, no nothing. You just have to get on with it.
So today's the 12th. By the 19th, you should be back down at base camp. Is it a 7-day round trip, or is it 7 days to the summit and a few back?
Honestly, like I said, you could just pick that up and rip it apart again. Like, the intention, I would say now, is we're going to leave in the next day or two. Please God, everything goes well. We'll be back down within 7 or 8 days. That's just what we're hoping for at the moment. But that could completely change in an hour's time, you know. And I'm looking like it was sunshine and bliss, 20, 22 degrees an hour ago. The snow has come in now. You can't see 20 metres ahead of you, and it's absolutely Baltic.
Right, okay. People are reading about your stuff in the Irish Times as you've been across the weeks writing about it. Will they be able to follow over the next while, or does radio silence happen at some point when you get a certain height?
Yeah, the last piece will go into the Irish Times now this weekend of our rotation up the mountain and what's happened over the last couple of days, and it's going to be radio silence from the next 2 days. I have a GPS tracker that may go live on my social medias. I don't know if it's going to work, so I don't want to make any promises, but I know at least I have a little handheld that I can send a message home to my loved ones and just say, I'm alive. We've made it to the top, we're on the way down, or whatever, the bare basics. But hopefully I should have a tracker on my social medias. It may or may not work.
Well, listen, we'll let you go and chat to your mum, because she's definitely more important than us. Best of luck with it, Pádraig. Great to chat to you.
Lads, thanks so much. Thanks for the opportunity too. And like I said, everything is based around Mayo Mental Health Association. If anybody wants to donate, you can go straight to their page. And if not, just have those conversations, have a look at what we do. And we'll just keep pushing the ball forward.
Go well.
Cheers, Pádraig. That's great. Thanks.
Much love, lads. Thanks so much.
Cheers. Good luck.